Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Own your space, right? And what I mean by that is put boundaries up, put these sort of constraints around what you talk about and the expertise that you have. Instead of taking everything on, just be specific about what you're talking about. And if you want to be a leader in that category, you kind of have to own that category. The leader is not 10 people. The leader is one. So if you want to be that leader, then narrow your focus, and then you could always broaden it later on. But if you narrow your focus first and foremost, that's going to help you way much in the long term than, hey, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to talk about everything. Talk about one thing first and then branch out later.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you also enjoyed my recent conversations with Mike Montague of Sandler Training and with Steph Clark of Steph's Business Bookshelf. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Jason Resnick, also known as Rez with a triple Z or triple Z. Jason has built a very successful freelance business himself. We've connected over many years, and I can't believe I haven't had him on the podcast before. He now helps other freelancers build a business that supports their lifestyle by helping them niche down, specialize, and build recurring revenue. A quick promotional message from our sponsor. That's my business, InnovaBiz. We help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. As a result, their ideal clients virtually self-select and line up to work with them. To help you get clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can build a strong, enduring relationship with them, take a look at our Marketing Master mini class. It's just two modules, and in less than 30 minutes, you'll get a real clear picture of who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. You can even use the exercise to define your ideal audience for a podcast, your ideal team member when you're hiring, or your ideal audience for a speech or presentation. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It is completely free and it's accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Jason talked to me about asking really good questions to identify the actual needs of your customer. We talked about creating referral trigger moments and how and when to ask for referrals. And we talked about building relationships. There it is again, that word. Building relationships to generate recurring revenue. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jason Resnick. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Oceanside, New York in the USA, Jason Resnick, who helps freelance developers and designers build recurring revenue through specialization. Welcome to the podcast, Jason. It's a privilege to have you as my guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jürgen. I'm excited to be here.
Now, you and I have crossed paths in many online communities, and we've spoken in the past about all kinds of things related to marketing and marketing automation. And you're very active in a whole range of communities, the WordPress community and WP Elevation, where I think we first crossed paths. Mm. And I can't believe we haven't had you on the podcast before. So it's high time we fixed that today.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Yeah. I'm excited to be here. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think we did cross paths, I think initially on WP Elevation, but there's definitely been several other different communities that we've also crossed paths as well. So I'm excited to be here.
And you also host two podcasts, Live in the Feast, which I was privileged to be on recently. I'm not sure which episode we'll publish first. And also the Ask Rez podcast, where you basically answer questions that your community put to you, which I think is a great model to build a podcast off. Mm-hmm. Now, both of those are designed to be actionable and help freelancers to take action on their business and to build recurring revenue. And basically your philosophy, I think, is helping freelancers to build the life that they want to have rather than designing a business that dictates their life, design a life that and then build a business that gives them that. So I'm really looking forward to digging deeper into all that today. I guess the first question I have for you is what exactly is it that you do and why do you do it?
Yeah.
And I know that's a double question. I'm trying to avoid double questions.
No, it's awesome. Yeah, and it's funny. I love that question, why do you, you know, why do you do it? Because that to me is something that's most important. So first, the reason why I do anything that I do as far as my business goes is my family. You know, I want the time, freedom, and flexibility to be able to spend more time with them. You know, I have two young boys, and, you know, one's just about to enter preschool, the oldest one. And so, you know, I'm able to go be there next week when he walks through those doors. And so, you know, if I had a job in a cube where I was essentially told to be there from 9 to 5 and this and that and the other, I couldn't do that. So without asking permission to take off, right? And so
And you feel bad about it.
Or maybe not. Yeah. But so for me, and that was a realization that I came to real early on in my, just in my story, my experience, my life was, you know, even just as a teenager, you know, I was working from the age of, you know, I had a paper route, you know, delivering newspapers when I was 12. I was working as a stock boy at a fabric store when I was 14. And it was then where I realized, or I vowed to myself that, you know, and I didn't know what this looked like. I was a 14-year-old boy. Mm. You know, what do I know? But I vowed that I didn't want to work at a job that I dreaded getting up in the morning to do every single day. And so that was just a vow that I made to myself. And so, like I said, I didn't know what that looked like, but what it really turned into was that, you know, once the internet came around in the, you know, mid to late 90s, and as my career started going, you know, I saw the opportunity here to say, hey, I'm a developer, I'm a web developer. Maybe this is the way in which I can build a business designed around the life that I want. And so I started out as a developer, very much a jack of all trades developer, doing Java development, PHP, Ruby on Rails, all sorts of different technologies. And that came by way of where I came from. Like, I worked for a consultant firm that basically put me into a seat at some company, said, hey, you have to write this type of code. So when that whole thing, and that was in the early 2000s, and that was when the whole startup boom started happening. When all of that collapsed in on itself, then I was laid off. So that was my first foray, because it was like an opportunity. I said, hey, look, maybe this is the time for me to try this on my own. I have the skill set. People seem to want this thing. Maybe there's a way in which I can make this work. Well, 18 months later, I had to go get another job because I had bills to pay and all that. And what I didn't know then was all of the other things. Like, the skill set was fine. It was just the marketing, the sales, the client management, the onboarding, the offboarding, all of these other things, networking, just all of these things about business that I didn't have to do as just a developer sitting in a chair. So, you know, I worked my way back because I knew that I wanted this. And in 2010 is when I decided to quit my job. And I've been doing my own business ever since. To get to the point of specialization is that I narrowed that focus, right? I narrowed that tech stack, if you will, based on what my customers were needing from me, meaning not they weren't asking me for WordPress or WooCommerce or ConvertKit or any of these other sort of tools. They just needed a solution that was easy enough for them to manage and not have to be in it every single day to figure out, you know, to be familiar enough with it, right? And so that's how I settled on WordPress, because I was rolling my own CMSs in Ruby on Rails and things of that nature. And even myself going back after like 3, 4, 5 months, I'd be like, how did I do this stuff? Like, I can't, if I can't remember how to do it, how do I expect the client to, right? So that's how I became, you know, known as the WooCommerce guy, was because in order for me to really be successful in my business, I realized that I had to focus and I had to really niche down and service essentially a specific customer with a specific need and then grow from there. You know, nowadays, most of what I do is behavioral marketing. That involves some email marketing, that involves some on-site personalization, basically be able to decrease the time to first purchase for my clients, as well as create repeat buyers for them. And so that's my main focus for the services side of the business. And you mentioned that I help other freelancers, other developers and designers. For me, that is something that mainly what it was off the back of me publishing my prices on my website, people knowing that I live in New York. At that time, I was living in New York City. It's not a cheap place to live. And the bucket that people put me in, because I was doing recurring revenue or predictable income for the business, they said, hey, how are you charging what you're charging to your clients when most everybody else, like WP Curve, are charging like $59, $99? And I said, well, I'm not doing WordPress maintenance. I'm doing business strategy and implementation and all sorts of different other things. And those conversations turned into a lot of questions and wanting people asking me at events and things like that, basically wanting to know how I shape my business. And so about 2 years ago, I decided to formalize it in a way. And when that happened was when my first son was born, I realized the dream, like a lifelong dream. I was able to be home to see his first steps, hear his first words. And I literally asked my wife on the way home from the hospital, I said, so what do I do now? And she was just like, what do you mean? Probably thinking to herself, like, well, I just had a child. What are you talking about you for? Yeah. Right? But I realized that I had reached a dream. And so the premise for where I come from to help other developers and designers to do that is generally from that standpoint. I want to help as many other people realize those dreams too, because when we start our own business, we don't start it to get 10, 15, 20 bosses. We started it for some other reason, right? Yeah, and so I want more and more developers and designers to be able to realize their dreams too. And if I can help them over some of the hurdles that I already am past, that's what I love to do.
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful story. And, you know, there's so many great things in there to unpack. I guess going back to what you said at the beginning to looking to solve problems for customers, I think that's probably one of the real secrets to any business, is to start with that premise and then to focus on those people that you can help and focus fairly narrowly. I think that was another point you made there. I'm curious, because you said, you know, the first time you went out on your own, you had to wrap up and go out and get a job again because you weren't generating enough income to pay all the bills. So what changed when you went out the second time? What did you do different that set you on the path to where you are today?
Yeah, I'd obviously done some deep soul searching because it was, you know, ego swallowing and all the rest of it, because it was a gut punch to say, you know, that I failed at this, right? Mm. But for me, I've always been like this, is like, I recognized that something went wrong, didn't go down the path that I wanted to go down, but why didn't it? And what can I learn from that so that it doesn't happen again? So I really analyzed what I made mistakes on. And so knowing that I didn't know anything about sales, didn't know anything about client management, meaning onboarding clients properly, marketing myself, those sort of things, that's what I went back to learn. I worked for a couple of other smaller design agencies in various different forms. Some, you know, I worked for one that just dealt in the medical space. So they did doctor practices and hospitals and medical societies and things like that, websites for those kind of organizations. I worked for another one that just did basically built things for flight schools, built websites, intranets, okay. And, you know, sort of programs online for flight schools. And so what I did was I went back, instead of trying to learn all the tech stuff, because that's what I did the first go around, I tried to make friends with sales teams and marketing teams and mingle at company events and just try to pick their brain. Like, hey, how was that conference that you went to last? Because as a developer, I was just behind the scenes. I wasn't allowed to go to those conferences, right? Mm. But just try to ask a lot of different questions. Like, how do you manage this certain situation? Or what, as I get the work orders, and I could see the contracts there, I'd say, well, why is this part of the contract? Or why is this here? Or you're just asking a lot of questions. And, you know, most of the salespeople had no problem sharing their information. But for me, it was more of just this information gathering and this research phase to then say what I like, what I don't like, how I want to run my business, and how I don't want to run my business. And so I basically took that next, I would say, 6 years or so to really put that all together into what is now my business.
Hmm. Okay. The other thing I really like was, you talked about a number of tools that I know you specialize in, but again, you came back to they're really the tools we use to achieve a solution. And you talked about the behavioral marketing, which is something very close to my heart, in terms of, you know, building relationships with people. And you've just mentioned there is a lot of the things that you learnt about business where you realized you had gaps was also built on a lot on relationships. So how do you go out? Because for me, I'm an introvert, believe it or not, even though I can talk on a podcast. But
same here.
A lot of developers and techno geeks tend to be a little bit like that because they're kind of buried in their computer most of the time. So how did you get over that and go out there and start to build those relationships, even with people where you weren't sure that there was value in that relationship, but it was really just about building relationships to expand your network and to learn from whoever you could learn from?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a question my wife asks, and she gets it. She understands the answer. She just doesn't ever understand. She's like, I don't get that. Yeah. But what happens in my own head is, and because I'm very much an introvert as well, before I answer the question, I had this great conversation with Janelle Allen on her podcast. And she had said that she had heard that introverts are just people who get energy for being alone. Hmm. It's not that they can't be in social situations or things of that nature. It's just they'd much rather, like, at the end of a conference day, they go back to their hotel room and sit in their room alone for 2 hours before they go out to dinner, right? And I love that because that's exactly how I am. How I do it is I basically just almost trick my mind a little bit, meaning that I say, well, it's for the business, which then ultimately is for my family, Right. And so it's just keeping always that why in front and center for me, which allowed me to talk at WordCamp New York City, which my wife was, you know, she's like, I don't know how she came, you know, and she sat in the crowd and she goes, I can't believe you talked to like 75 plus people in a room. Like, I would have never expected that. And I said, well, me neither. But nonetheless, it was easy enough for me to do. You know, I have a podcast. As you said, I have two podcasts. And, you know, just even just looking at the download numbers, sometimes I have to take a step back because it's like, you think about it, like you put out an episode and if that's 100 people listen to that, then you just filled up a room, you know, with of 100 people that just heard what you had to say. So it's, for me, it's really just a little mindset play that I have. Like, you know, yes, while I may be nervous or anxious or stressed out about it, I get over it by saying, okay, well, this is for the business. If it works out, works out. If it doesn't work out, doesn't work out. But if I don't do it, then I may not know, I may not make that connection, and where I want to go for the business to spend time with my family may not ever get there. So it's just a little behavioral play on a game that I play with myself.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's having front of mind all the time. What's the vision for you, for your life, and how does the business fit into that? So what's the purpose for the business, which in the first instance is to give you the life that you want. So that really drives everything you do, and it makes decision-making easier, I would imagine, too. I mean, certainly does for me. I know you have a big servant's heart as well. So, you know, you're out there helping other people. You've got programs to help other freelancers deliver. So I think for me, often the knowledge that, okay, I'm going on stage to do a presentation and I'm here to serve that audience. So I've got some stuff that hopefully can help them. So I'm just going to go out there and do my best for them and then, you know, not worry about how I might look or how I might think. Now, for me, the introversion manifests itself if I do something like that. I had August, I had lots of events on that I went out and presented and so on. And I found that very draining on my own energy. So I need kind of time and space for myself to recharge, which that's how I find that it manifests itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to tell you a little bit about me is even for my own wedding, 3 days prior to it, and I know that it's just most people are there for my wife and the bride is the center of attention, but you know, I'm there in the pictures and things like that, but like just the overwhelming, and that's my friends and family, right, that are coming to that, but like just in the own mindset of how many people are going to be here, and they like, you know, is dinner going to go right, is the music going to sound good, is everything going to come off without a hitch, and you know, all of these other things that go through your mind, it just was like, all right, stop. It's about you and Joanna here. And let's just push everybody else aside and let the night happen, you know, enjoy the moment. So it took me 3 days to put my head into that space. But yeah, I get that introvert thing a lot. And people ask me that all the time too. It's like, how do you have podcasts and do all these things? And you say yourself an introvert, but you know, and definitely by far, my wife knows, like I could spend the entire week and in the house and not see a human being the entire time. Yeah. Whereas she gets cabin fever and she likes to go out and socialize and do these other things. So.
All right. Now, you mentioned earlier that your model from very early on, I think in terms of revenue in your business was to have recurring revenue and hence predictable income. So tell us a little bit about the strategies you use to put that into place, because typically I guess people first starting out in web development, for example, or software development, they quote on a project. So here's the size of the project, these are the things that we've got to do, and that's the cost of it, and maybe they'll spread out the payments over two or three payments perhaps, but the recurring revenue, the retainer kind of model, I think is something that a lot of people now are starting to look at and be really attracted to.
Yeah, there's really two things that I always looked at. One, it was obviously identifying the problem that I was solving for them. And figuring out if that problem was a chronic problem, right? Mm. So was it a recurring thing that would come up every month, every quarter, every year, something of that nature, and try to attach myself to that. So one of the things that I always flocked to where a lot of developers have backed away from was e-commerce, right? I always loved e-commerce. It was just something that I enjoyed. I came up and learned how to develop, you know, building out e-commerce stores from scratch, you know, in the mid to late 90s, before, way before Amazon was even around. Mm. And so I always loved that. And I loved the psychology. Back then, the solving the problem was getting somebody to put in a credit card number. Like, yeah, people didn't want to do that back then, right? And so just to be able to build the trust and how the site looked and where things sat and all that, when you got somebody to pay, it was like, hey, we did it, you know? Now it's a different game, right? Now it's all about different things and, you know, packages and bundles and offers and all these other different ways in which you can get people to buy. But there's all of these other nuances. And so I've always helped my customers, as I said before, is to decrease the time to first purchase and then create repeat purchases as well as raving fans as a side effect. So how do I do that? Well, one, if I just said I want to create repeat customers, right? Mm. So if I can't create a repeat customer for myself, how am I going to create that for my clients, right? It's something that they want. It's something that's critical to their business. It's, you know, it's something that they're going to try to solve one way or the other. And if I can do that on a consistent basis for them through tweaking things, bringing new things to the table, because the thing, and this is the second point, is that they are an expert in their business. I'm an expert in the online business, right? So they may be selling physical goods. They may be selling coaching, or they may be, you know, a nonprofit looking for donations. Like, that's their business. That's their expertise. It's my job as a developer or a marketing consultant to be able to then bring my education to the table to make their business grow, right? So they don't have to know all of the nuances or the new strategies and new campaigns that you can build. That's my job. So I can bring that to the table on a weekly basis during our scrum calls. And I call them scrum calls. It's just a quick touch base call where I could say, hey, look, I was reading up on this. Here's an article. Here's a video. I think this is going to be good. Maybe this is a topic of discussion for next month, trying not to distract off of the current work that we're doing, but saving it for next month. And it's just something that comes front of mind to them every single week because they know we're going to have a conversation. I can keep suggesting new projects along the way that's going to help grow their bottom line. Some projects fall flat, some projects are home runs, but I'm aligning myself to being their go-to person so that they don't have to think about things. And that's where I think a lot of developers and designers miss the mark, if you will, is that they just take the suggestion of, hey, I need a new redesign. Mm. And then they run with it. Whereas if you just take pause and say, hey, look, appreciate the suggestion. Why do you think you need your new web design? And what happened was for me, when the first time that I pushed pause on that and pushed back on a lead with that, I found out that all they really wanted was, it was coming close to the end of the year, the holiday season, and they wanted a 25% increase on their sales from last year. That was their reasoning for a redesign. And so I said, well, why do you want a whole new redesign? And they said, well, just to look fresh. And I think, you know, we've kind of flatlined on our orders, all that. So I said, okay, well, let me take a look at your product pages and checkout process and things like that. And we just made a few tweaks, a few small tweaks. It was probably about 7 to 9 hours worth of work just to put into the site that then they got 45% over the last year. So instead of them spending $25,000, to maybe have a nice looking redesigned website.
Yeah, they only spent a necessarily deliver the result.
Right. And they're not as happy as they could be. I'm not as happy as I could be. Where I offered them a few $1,000 to solve this problem for them. And bam, I know, I was just like, so that's how it's done. And so I've just been doing that rinse and repeat ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You know, the power of the why question, or what's it supposed to achieve? I mean, they're the two that I kind of just love asking all the time. And like you say, often you uncover something that can be addressed much more easily and much more effectively with a different approach than what they've come to you with.
Hmm. And the thing is they had no idea about the whole process, you know, like their checkout process, right? And so that was my experience and expertise stepping in. Instead of just taking the orders and writing lines of code as they dictated it, which they're not the expert in the whole thing anyway, well, from my experience, if we make some tweaks, that's going to make a big impact. We can make some more tweaks and maybe we'll get to the goal that we're reaching. And so you have to kind of put your best, you know, and I say this to my coaching clients a lot, is challenge your leads, right? But don't be confrontational about it. Just say, appreciate what their suggestion is. Remember, they're telling you symptoms. They're not diagnosing the problem. It's your job to diagnose the problem, right? So while a doctor may say, hey, you go to the doctor with a rash and you're saying, hey, I got poison ivy. Well, the doctor's got to diagnose if it is actually poison ivy or not, right? And so, you know, let the expert do the job. And so that's, I say a lot to my coaching clients, challenge your leads and clients when they come to you with what they want you to do. Yes, sometimes it's just like, hey, I need this. And fine, that's okay. But for the big things, just take pause for a minute, digest what they said, and then maybe come back with a better solution for them.
Yeah, and the other thing I like to look at is what's the outcome look like? What's a successful outcome look like? Which, you know, you've done in your example was the 25% increase in sales over that holiday period. So the outcome was pretty clear, and they had the outcome in their mind, which is good. Sometimes clients come and they're not really clear on what the outcome is. They just want that website redesigned.
Absolutely. And it was like pulling teeth. They didn't just come out and say that. Okay, well, why is it important? Like, what is the meaning about it? And basically just kept digging until they told me that, because they probably, I can only imagine that they said, well, we want to grow our sales from last year. And for me, grow is okay. That's good. Or increase. Yeah. That's good. But could we put a number to that? Right. And a lot of times clients, especially leads, they're going to hold these things to their heart, like real tight. And they're not going to let up the reins. They may never give you any numbers, but if you can at least get a percentage and then do some napkin math, maybe you know how much, you know, a customer of theirs, whether it is an e-commerce or service-based business or something else, maybe you can find out how much a customer means to them. What's their dollar amount, right? What's the ROI? When they get a customer, how much do they make off of it? Then you can ask other questions. Well, how much traffic do you get? How many customers do you get out of your website? And then you can do some napkin math to kind of say, well, if I can get you 10 more customers, which then translates to $10,000 more a month to you, let's just say that, you know, the customer is $1,000. Well, not surprisingly, the leads could be like, well, how'd you figure that out? Well, you just asked a whole bunch of other questions to do that napkin math. It takes practice, but it's something that I teach all of my coaching clients and people inside of Feast to try to do. Just, you find resistance one way, then just start asking the same question in a different way and another way.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, having the knowledge that here's the expectation, and if we get that, which, you know, the 25% increase in sales, for example, if we get that, then it's successful. So we call that a success, and then everybody's happy, and they're probably very happy. Now, that which then brings me to the next topic I wanted to explore with you, which is referrals and word of mouth marketing. Now, I know that probably the vast majority of your business, from what you put out there, is from word of mouth marketing, and you've got processes in place. So tell us a little bit more about that, what you do there. Obviously, you know, delivering great outcomes for clients is step one. What do you do from there?
Yeah. Word of mouth, I've never put an ad dollar into my service-based business at all. Right. So I've been doing this since 2010, and I still haven't yet spent one ad dollar. So I'm pretty proud of that. But to that point, now you need some sort of system. You need to spark the referral moment. You need some sort of trigger point to have a client or even a non-client to refer you. Nobody's going to keep you front of mind just because they're a good person. I mean, they have good intentions, but if you don't create that moment, then it's not going to happen, right? And so there's certain things that are very, very simple that you can do. Now, I use email mostly. About 80% of my communications with clients are through emails, weekly status updates, help tickets, those sort of things. Now, it's easy enough to put templates around these things that then every third or fourth email that goes out, well, sparks a referral. It says, hey, if you know, we're working on this together. And that goes back to being a specialist too, right? So if I know that I'm working in ConvertKit with them, I say, hey, look, if you hear anybody else that has any problems with their ConvertKit account, I wouldn't mind an introduction, right? And it's just in the PS or something of that nature. It's just as a part of the email in a natural way. There's other ways in which you can do this at a more strategic level too, is that I call them milestone moments, right? And so you could do these things where, you know, you celebrate these, hey, we pushed up a feature today. That was awesome, right? And then instead of just sending an email to say, hey, we did this thing, give them a call or give them a personalized video, send them a gift card. I did this one time to this one client that they lived in an area in the Midwest where there was no, and they knew he was a baseball nut and his son was a baseball nut, right? Big fans, but they were big fans of the local minor league team there. And so I said, well, this is pretty cool. I'm a huge baseball fan myself. I'm going to send them two tickets just to celebrate. Right. And so, you know, and we didn't, it was just a milestone point of a project. It wasn't a huge launch or anything like that, but he said his son had a great time. He had a great time and all that, but it created that memorable moment in his head. And he's consistently referred me work from, whether or not it was from that or not, but it's something that's now a memorable moment in his mind, that he had this moment with his son at a game that they enjoyed anyway. And so if you could inject those sort of experiences into your customer's journey with you, it goes a long way than just the Stripe payment, you know, an email, a couple of help desk tickets going back and forth, and then away you go, right? And then into the, you know, bucket of email marketing that happens afterwards, right? If you create these special moments and these experiences through your business, that's what it's all about. That's when you create those referable moments. And that's when, you know, Jay Baer talks about it best, is that it's a remarkable moment, right? People aren't going to remember that you sent them to a thank you page with a share link, right? They're going to remember that baseball game with their son and say, hey, this guy Rez, you know, from New York, he bought us tickets after we did some work with him, right? Yeah. And so it's creating those remarkable moments that are the pivotal point that you can actually do for creating that word of mouth marketing. Because that's the other thing too. People ask me, I ask them all the time, rather, you know, what's your, I'm assuming it's word of mouth, but what's your number one lead generation tactic? They say word of mouth marketing. Awesome. So what are you doing to do that? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it just happens. And I said, well, then that's not marketing. Marketing means that there's some strategy and tactic behind it, that you're expecting some certain result. If you're just getting word of mouth by happenstance, then you're not doing anything. right? So let's just take some simple actions. Even a little sentence or two in an email somewhere can go a long way to making that happen.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. And I love that story. Jay Baer in, I think it's Talk Triggers, the book, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He basically says, you know, by creating those moments, people talk about you. And so in that example, people would talk about you in the context of, you know, Rez has given us these tickets to the baseball, you know, when we got to this key milestone. And so, you know, the natural response, of course, is, oh, that's really cool. And then the next question is likely to be, well, what did you work on with this guy? And mm-hmm. then they say, oh, I need something like that. Can you give me his number? So that's, you know, it's kind of almost a natural progression. And I've experienced that too. You know, recently I was at an event and somebody came up and started talking. I knew this person, but I, you know, didn't have a relationship with them, but they're in partnership in another business with one of my clients. And, you know, so they started talking about what I'd done for this client, and it was the gift that I'd brought to them when we launched the podcast. And so that was the talk. The talk was about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love that example too. I mean, and that book, Talk Triggers, is great. I read the book. I also listened to the audiobook as well. You know, it's a quick read and it gives you some inspiration for other examples. One of the examples that really sticks out in my mind of that book is there's this burger place in San Francisco, I believe it is, or one of those, maybe San Jose, something like that, where at lunchtime, every cashier goes underneath the desk or underneath the counter and pulls out a deck of cards. And if the customer pulls out a joker, mm-hmm. the lunch is for free, right? Yeah. And what that does is it creates that remarkable moment where, hey, now they get to share it on Instagram. They get to do all these other, share it on social media. They get to share it with their friends and say, hey, I got a free lunch from wherever. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember what the place is.
Yeah, I don't remember what
name
it was. I don't think it's San Francisco because I would have been there last year.
but I mean, for me, it's like that. It's just taking a little creative experience like that and injecting it into your own business in some way that makes sense for you and your customers goes a long way with creating those remarkable moments and creating a referral. Like you become referable at that point in time.
Yeah.
And as you said, if you specialize, when you go down that natural progression, when that person goes down that natural progression of the conversation, oh, I use ConvertKit or I use WooCommerce. Maybe he can help me, right? Because they're not just going to say, oh, he did something on my website, right? Mm. Like if you're a generalist, that's probably what the response would be. But if he helped me do this in ConvertKit or he helped me build this in my WooCommerce store, oh, okay, there's the little referral, you know, trigger point as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. And the other thing I love about that, well, actually, there's a whole range of things. I mean, to me, you know, our marketing system that we build doesn't end with having made the sale because it's you know, we talked earlier about recurring revenue and building long-term relationships. So for me, it's a journey that kind of goes in a circle and, you know, the circle completes when you basically scaling up and doing the same thing on a bigger scale. But part of the marketing to me is delivering that exceptional service, building those moments, generating referrals and actively generating those referrals and having the clients become raving fans, which is what you mentioned earlier as well, and also looking for opportunities to do more work with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing too is to think about how you would want to experience working with you, right? Like it's a really meta sort of thing, but I always try to say, okay, anytime I'm trying something new or putting a process in that's automated into my business and my onboarding is automated, sequence of emails over the first 20 days that we're working together, you know, those sort of things. I'm like, oh, how would they feel when they get this email, right? Just creating those little points to reflect on what you're putting into it can go a long way because I want to work with people that I enjoy being around, right, and working with. And so I would assume that they would want a similar experience as I would. So I just try to get to know them a little bit more. I try to, you know, understand where they're coming from, what's important to them. And that can go a long way in creating those moments. I, you know, if I hadn't had those conversations to know that him and his son liked that team, I would have never been able to do that. Right. But just to be able to do something like that was pretty cool. And it's, yeah, you know, it was less than $100. And now he's given me multiple tens of multiple times more work off of that $100 that I spent on those two baseball tickets. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
it's well worth it.
Much better investment than advertising dollars. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fascinating, Jason. I could go on for ages digging some more into all these aspects, but I'm looking at the time and I think we need to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that'll inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Yeah. So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think you have to find a space away from the screen to be creative. I know for myself, when I need to write or I need to explore, brainstorm or something like that, I grab my whiteboard and I go either out on my deck if it's a nice day or into a completely different room. So because for me anyway, when I'm in front of the screen, then I get distracted by all the other things and just pulls me back in.
It's a little bit like the Disney creativity strategy, right? Where there's different spaces
for
creative space and the workspace or the sweat room, they call it.
Right.
Yeah. And then the reality room. So they have a third spot where you kind of try to match the vision with what's really going on and look for the gaps and figure out the strategy, how to get to where you want to be.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
Be honest with you, in part that, but also it's a little bit just, I guess, ingrained in my nature to go against the grain. So I kind of look at to see what other people are doing. And there's been times definitely where I followed and it hasn't worked as well. So I almost look at that as like, hey, those people doing that, that's fine. How do I do it differently? How do I inject my own thing into it? And that's always panned out for the better. Anytime I stay true to who I am and stay in my lane, seems to always work out. So for me, it's basically going against the grain of what everybody else is doing. Like I haven't spent an ad dollar. Everybody's dumping a whole bunch of money into Facebook, right? And so that's my MO, if you will.
Okay. All right. Well, that's certainly, I mean, I think having the courage to trust your instincts and trust your experience and say, I think this will work for me despite the prevailing advice, if you like, I think that's a really good thing. And then still having the flexibility to say, well, it didn't work, so what can I learn from that? And maybe I do go back to doing the prevailing advice. But yeah, I think that's always good. Do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Had you asked me this a month ago, I would have had a different answer.
Yeah.
I love Bonjoro. It's a quick video thing, and I know you use it as well. But the thing that I've really come to love is Notion. Notion is a tool. It's like, for me, and I'm sure they have a better tagline than what I would give it, but it's like Google Docs, Airtable,
Evernote.
Google Sheets, Evernote. Like all this stuff jammed up into one. And I'm really starting to, one, build out customer dashboards in there, building customer help desk in there, like a whole bunch of other things so that like I can probably reduce my monthly cost on my SaaS products just by giving that money to Notion. Because it's a real flexible tool that's allowing me to do a lot of different things that for me, I've bullet journaled. I have a notebook right here, physical notebook always by my side. But I've always been on this EverQuest of trying to figure out how do I make it such that my notes are indexable, I could find things, but when I find a useful article or something online, a resource online, I could save it to that. I can't save that in a notebook, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I've always had this kind of like Evernote / physical notebook / like directory on my computer kind of thing going on that was always like, oh, this is terrible. It's like, there's, where do I look for this thing that I remembered that I did, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've been messing around with Notion for about a month. I really put over the past 2 weeks good time. I've actually, last week, I've transitioned from my weekly bullet journal planning into Notion, and it's been awesome.
Yeah,
I don't even think I need to buy these things anymore.
Yeah, I love Notion. We've been using it for maybe a year. We've just finished transferring our entire systems and processes documentation over into Notion. Mm. We've got, I'm still using Asana for project management, but I'm starting to manage some projects in Notion as well. So I've got some dashboards there. I can see the time when we'll start to drop Asana as well. It really is a fabulous tool.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just planning out my week, being able to see at a day glance, and just with the relational databases, I could go up to the yearly vision and make sure everything is aligned real quick. It's a lot faster than me flipping through pages on
a
bullet journal.
I still have my notebooks though. I still love drawing, and that's my creative part, but I'll take photographs of that and put it in Notion under the day category, so I can go back and check the days.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, we've touched on this a little bit. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Communication. I tend to over-communicate, meaning anytime I see something, if I see something going astray, I immediately let them know. If I think something's going to be late, or I think there's going to be a problem with something, I don't even wait till that happens. I have weekly calls with my clients so that we're always on track. They know that call is a standing call at the same time every single week. And it allows me that call doubly focused, really. One, it allows them to know that there is a call, so they don't actually bother me during the rest of the week with a call that pulls me out of the work. And then I either have to get back into the work and all that. Basically distract me. But for two, it allows us to always touch point, and there's always, momentum there, and there's always, hey, I need this by this date. I'm waiting on you for this. There's always those checkpoints, from both sides during that call to say, hey, look, this is where we're going, and making sure that everything is staying on track as long as it's important. And it's one of the things that I say a lot in these calls is, because we do a lot of ideas and things like that on the calls, but, let's stay on, where does that fit in with what we're working on right now? Or is it something we just revisit a couple of weeks or next month or something like that? To keep on track, it's just communication and be over communication. Cause I mean, I find a lot of people struggle with is they're afraid to have a conversation with their clients, but if you're always talking to them, whether it's just an email or a phone call, they're not going to mind. Right? Yeah. Like they don't know what's going on in your world, just like you don't know what's going on in their world. So, what's important to them is to get the job done. And you need to make sure that you're on track with that. Don't spring surprises, because it goes back to my point before. I'd much rather somebody tell me that there's going to be a problem next week rather than me find out next week. And then what do we do with it?
Yeah. And then you have to fight fires. All right. Great advice. So keep the communication really high and, tend to over communicate rather than under. All right. And the final question, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think inject your own personality into it. To be honest with you, as I said, I was a WooCommerce developer, and I very much looked like one in 2014. And you know, my website looked very much like all of them out there, all the other developers that did it. And it wasn't until I came across Chris Ducker around that time. And, you know, I heard something on one of his podcasts where he had a guest. He was actually, it was like a group podcast. And one of the guests there, and he said, why don't you just inject some of your personality and that's going to help. And while I didn't really think about it too much for several months after that, it kind of came across my plate again. And it was about 2015 when I decided to rebrand myself. Basically, the look and feel of my site is very much what that rebrand was. Injecting more of me into it, more of New York, you know, more of my sort of blunt personality, if you will, or straightforward personality. Whereas before, I was talking about like we, even though it was just I. You know, it was, you know, more of like, hey, the reserve, I can't say these sort of things because these sort of things aren't, you know, looked at as the professional. But hey, for me, the quote that Chris Ducker had said was, your vibe is going to attract your tribe. And so, as I said, I want to work with clients that I want to hang out with, right? So if I repel clients that aren't that way, then that's fine for me, you know, because that's not going to really pan out for either one of us very well. So I'd much rather just inject my personality and see how it goes. And I think that will go a long way in standing out in a crowded market.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great advice. And also, you know, what you said there about attracting clients that are a good match, I think that's really important and something to bear in mind. I mean, when we all start our businesses new, we kind of take on and board any clients because we need the revenue, we need the income. But at some point, I think you come to the realization that there are clients who are not a good match for you, who would be better served if they worked with somebody else. And you can, yes, you can technically deliver a solution for them, but the energy it takes to do that and the wear and tear on both you as a service provider and on the client is actually very draining. And from a provider's point of view, it's actually a lost opportunity to be working with other people who aren't going to drain you as much.
Yeah, I mean, I just, there was a friend of mine, Curtis McHale, he actually has this metric that if during a sales conversation in the first 30 minutes that they don't laugh together for three times,
yeah,
he doesn't work with them.
Right?
Okay. So just that, at the, those kind of like salesy, cheesy kind of talks and laughs and stuff. But to and it sounds ludicrous, but like if you're stepping on their toes or you say some sarcastic remark, because I am sarcastic. And and so if I say a sarcastic remark and they take it the wrong way because they don't get it, or they literally take it the wrong way, that's like, that could be misconstrued further down the line. Right. And so, you know, just having those things, it goes a long way with how successful the project's going to be in the long term, because you're like, oh, I got to talk to this guy again. Like every single week I got to talk to this guy. I'm just going to cancel, you know? So, but having a personality is, you know, and injecting that, it doesn't mean to be like, you have to be all the way, but just a little bit here and there. And just, you know, if you think, if you come to a point at which you say, maybe I shouldn't say this, well, why is that? Is it controversial, or is it just like you're not looking as professional, right? If it comes to the point of not looking as professional, well, I just say, well, I'm going to throw it out there anyway, because that's who I am, right? I wear t-shirts, I wear shorts. You know, I inject my family where I can and where it makes sense. You know, my son's names are out there, that sort of thing. And so it is what it is. And that's part of who I am. I'm not going to, you know, keep that behind the curtain, so to speak.
All right. Well, thanks, Jason. This has been really great. Now, where can people find out more about you and reach out and maybe even say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Yeah. You can find me Rez.com, that's with three Z's. That's where both my podcasts are and where I talk a lot about, you know, building these sort of systems and processes in your business. Or I'm always open to a chat on Twitter. I'm at Rez, also there with 3 Z's. My DMs are open. And if you want to have a conversation, let's have one.
Great. And we'll post links to all of that on the show notes. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and a leader in innovation?
Number one piece of advice would probably be just own your space, right? And what I mean by that is put boundaries up, put these sort of constraints around what you talk about and the expertise that you have. Instead of taking everything on, just be specific about what you're talking about. And if you want to be a leader in that category, you kind of have to own that category. The leader is not 10 people. The leader is one. So if you want to be that leader, then narrow your focus, and then you could always broaden it later on. But if you narrow your focus first and foremost, that's going to help you way much in the long term than, hey, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to talk about everything. Talk about one thing first and then branch out later.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I've made this mistake at the beginning. Yes, I can do that. You know, people come to you with issues or problems they have, and you can say, well, I can help with that. I know how to do that. But if you're not a specialist in that area, or you're not the best person in that particular area, you're really not doing that client a service, and you're not doing yourself a service either. So you can invest that time in the things you are specialist in. And I've learned that every time I narrow my focus, I actually end up growing the business with a bit of a spurt if I do it right and do it well.
Absolutely.
All right. Finally then, Jason, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why? Another double question.
Yeah. That's a great question. Somebody that I just had on my podcast, Joel Klecki. I don't know if you've had him on your podcast yet.
No, I haven't.
But he's a copyright consultant, conversion copyright consultant. He's got a company that basically, it's called Case Study Buddy, where he talks a lot about, you know, how to build case studies, how to get case studies from clients, and use them in interesting ways in your sales process. But
I heard that podcast. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it was a great, great conversation. I'd be happy to make an introduction if that's something you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, so we'll reach out and have a conversation with Joel in the future.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously, Jason. I've really enjoyed this a lot. I had a great fun talking with you. I've learned a lot more about how you run your business. I've been, as I say, we've crossed paths quite a lot. I've followed your, particularly your Live in the Feast podcast, and followed the work you do. I keep getting emails from you. So I've sort of learned a lot more and filled in a lot of the gaps now.
Yeah, awesome, man. Thanks for having me, and thanks for inviting me to share a few moments with you and your audience here. It was truly a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Jason and took something away from this episode. He shared some wonderful tips about how to identify the real needs of the customer, how to have your customers become raving fans, and about creating referrals. I'd love to know what you took away from Jason's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Jason Resnick. That is JasonResnick, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Jason Resnick. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jason there, as well as links to his website, his social media pages, the Live in the Feast and the Ask Rez podcasts, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Jason suggested that we have a conversation with Joel Klecki of Case Study Buddy, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Joel, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Jason Resnick. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and you don't even have to give away your email. In less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call just to see if indeed we are a good fit for one another. Tune in again next week. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including George Bryant of GB Masterminds and Amanda Cromer of Dark Branding. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.